Welcome, everyone. I will call the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue to order. It is June 16th, 2009. That's why I never give the date. I always get it wrong. We're going to go in reverse order today, starting off from the bottom with a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2904. And then we're going to go to Senate Bill 976, and we will finish up with House Bill 2472. We have the amendment almost in perfect form, so what we'll do is present the amendment to 2472, and then we will recess in hopes of coming back at 2:45 to have the corrected amendment available to us. But I want everyone to know what the thrust of the amendment is. So we will start out by opening a public hearing on House Bill 2904. We have a representative of Representative Kotek's office here to speak. And we would like to have you keep your testimony very brief. We have your written comments, and you wanted to bring someone with you? Okay. All right.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Marianne Almeida, and like the chair said, I'm here today on behalf of Representative Kotek. This is her bill, and it is a constituent issue of hers, and since she had her Ways and Means Subcommittee that she could not get out of today, she asked that I testify for her. So please accept her written testimony and my testimony on her behalf. Essentially, House Bill 2904 creates a new category of farm use special assessment for land that has been damaged for whatever reason, by fungus, by pest, by any type of severe adverse condition that needs fixing. So in this case, the farms that need fixing would be able to maintain their tax status while they remediate whatever problem it is that is affecting their land. This would allow them to return to farm use as soon as possible and not risk losing their tax status in the meantime. I have with me today Anthony Fazio and Carol Levine. They are representing our constituents. Fazio Farms has been growing pickling cucumbers in northeast Portland for generations, dating back to World War I, and they have been recently affected by a fungus on their land in the late 1990s, which made it impossible for them to continue growing the crops that they were. So working with OSU Extension Services, they came up with a plan to fix the problem, but in the meantime, they lost their special tax assessment, which would enable them to continue farming or return to farming instead of changing their land to a different use. This significant financial loss was a big problem for Fazio Farms, and that's what we're seeking to fix with this bill. Multnomah County assessors would then be able to grant them the farm use special tax assessment even though they were not currently farming because they were working to return to farming and working to remediate their land in the meantime. That since this bill bridges the gap, we also believe it's a broader policy that is wise for the state. Even though this is just one farm inspiring this bill, Representative Kotek believes that it is a bigger problem and one that likely has already affected other farmland, and if it hasn't already, necessarily probably will in the future, which means that it's a good idea in terms of a general public policy. There are very strict sideboards that are written into the bill to prevent this. This is something that we spent a lot of time working on in the House committees, including preventing the eligibility of areas of land, the portions of the farmland that isn't affected by the conditions, a return to farmland to farm use after the plan is completed, and that remediation is the primary use for any equipment or machinery that is purchased for this type of intent. So all of those things are covered by the farm use special assessment in this category, but it also must be returned to farming afterwards. The Anne Gross version passed the House unanimously on the 10th of June, but there is a small amendment that we are requesting. The first section of the amendment, it reduces the rulemaking burden on OSU Extension Services. This would have been unusual and almost unprecedented for them to do, so this takes away that rulemaking authority instead of making the plans be certified on a case-by-case basis instead of adopting a formula. And the other aspect of the A4 amendment is something that that Sean Cleave and Jeff Stone are here to talk about today. It is the piece that they are requesting being added into this bill to provide for a different level of farm equipment and machinery that I believe we'll speak about later. So please join Representative Kotek in supporting this bill. I urge you to pass this out of the committee today.
Thank you very much. Let's move to the rest of the panel and then we'll have
questions. Thank you. I'm Carol Levine. Madam Chair, committee members, thank you for having us here today. I represent Fazio Farms, and just briefly, I want to bring to your attention that I did submit written testimony that includes a narrative and a letter from the Department of Revenue from OSU Extension Services that talk about the situation that the Fazios were faced with. The bill is largely a an effort of collaboration between Representative Kotek's office, Multnomah County, the Department of Revenue, and again, we urge this committee to pass it. The FASIOs have been able to return all but 5 acres back to production, and they anticipate being able to complete the rest shortly. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. My name is Anthony Fazio, and I don't really have much to say here because of time constraints, but if you guys have any questions, I'm here to answer them.
Thank you very much. Looks like you've put in a lot of work to get your cucumbers back online.
Yes, this hair was brown when I started.
As a pickle lover, I endorse your efforts heartily. Just one brief question. You have to get it back into farm use under this bill, but is there a time limit? I mean, are you committed to stay in farm use for a certain period of time?
Well, essentially, what the bill requires is that if you're not farming it for the period of time that you remediated, that when you have to pay those potential additional taxes, it adds time to the 5 years that's currently provided for by statute. So it adds additional time. So if you don't return it to remediation, then you have a longer period of time to pick up those additional taxes.
Okay, thank you. Other questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have John Phillips, Jeff Stone, and Sean Cleave. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sean Cleave, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. I'll speak first to the FASIO's issue of the original intent of 2904. Farm Bureau had participated in crafting some fixes regarding some of the mechanisms, specifically to the question of the chair regarding that period of time where the farm would be required to farm for a period after that remediation. We were concerned that there might be people that might take advantage of this program and not actually return to farming. So that type of clawback language for those taxes that would be otherwise due is included in the bill. The House Bill 2904A4 amendments also detail just a few tweaks to the language that was at the request of Oregon State University Extension Service and also requests from the Department of Revenue regarding how the program would work moving forwards. So those are in the A4 amendments. As well as on the back of page 3, there is a piece regarding temporary, a term used in the industry as a hoop house. These are temporary structures that are used to extend the growing season for nurseries and other vegetable type growing operations. I'm going to let Mr. Stone from the Nursery Association speak a little bit more to this. Farm Bureau represents nurseries as well as other entities, but he knows his book of business better than I do.
Thank you. Welcome.
Madam Chair, Jeff Stone, Oregon Association of Nurseries. I'm glad to have that on the record that I know more about my business than he does.
It's always a relief.
It is a relief, Madam Chair.
There's always one, Madam Chair.
Just a quick reminder, I know that time is short, but the big storms that hit in December of 2008 hit the nursery and greenhouse industry particularly hard. And there was a lot of press. We received a presidential declaration of disaster about many of the hoop houses that we're talking about here, which are unheated structures collapsing under the snow and ice, caused up towards $50 million worth of damage of structures and plant material. And that's just for the 160 growers that reported in. So it hit the Willamette Valley particularly hard. And the nursery and greenhouse industry, responding to storms that hit a decade earlier, started using hoop houses. And the evolution of a hoop house has increased over time. It used to be just PVC pipe with a glorified tarp on it. Now it has some skeletal structures with polyurethane and others to try to extend the growing season, as Mr. Cleave indicated. In March, Department of Revenue, which can speak clearly for themselves, underwent rulemaking to talk about the differences between a greenhouse and a hoop house. We have participated in that effort and feel that a legislative remedy is needed before this group today. It's a big priority for the nursery and greenhouse industry because there isn't one nursery that doesn't have a hoop house. It can range from a small nursery having just a couple to Monrovia growers that have well over 200. A lot of the hoop houses are done because it helps with reducing the amount of labor to move plant material back and forth. We have a year-long labor force, but still having these strategically placed on a nursery operation is important. Tom Fessler from Woodburn Nursery in Azalea has had conversations with tax assessors, the county tax assessors, about the appropriateness of taxation of these entities, and has won in the tax court twice as they have deemed that these are not taxable entities. We want to be clear that the difference between a greenhouse and a hoop house, and that's what we try to accomplish in these amendments. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Welcome, John Phillips.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. John Phillips of the Oregon Department of Revenue. To the bill specifically, we did work extensively with Representative Kotek and the other, and Sean Cleave and the Fazios, and we do think that there's the sideboards on this expansion is narrowly focused on issues that are created from severely adverse conditions on farms, not at the fault of the farmer themselves. And so there was a concern that if a farmer starts to change the use of their land to another use, like maybe an industrial use, that they not continue to receive a special assessment for farming when they're trying to convert the land to some other use. So there are some sideboards on this that do, as you asked earlier, Madam Chair, allow the special assessment recoupment to go back in time an additional 5 years if that's the case. So the department has had a substantial comment on this, and we feel that it is ready. On the amendment, regarding the hoop houses, which just came up recently, I have passed around some photos of some examples. One of them is, as Jeff mentioned, the what was traditionally the PVC greenhouse, which I had in my backyard. Most people have had, yes. And so that is what, under current law, we believe is exempt. The other two pictures represent more of what, as Jeff mentioned, the industry is evolving into, more structured steel frame construction. And we did not think that that falls under the current statutory scheme, because the current statutory scheme refers to machinery and equipment and personal property. And a structure that has steel frame construction just doesn't fit into machinery and equipment or personal property. So we added a new section that refers specifically to buildings and structures.
So these two things would still be exempt?
They would only be exempt if this amendment passes into this bill and this bill passes.
All right. Thank you. And nobody ever lives in these things, right?
No.
Okay. All right. Questions from the committee. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of questions, actually, if I may. Of the department, if these structures, and I assume they do, have some kind of irrigation or drip irrigation or something, would that be considered a part of the hoop, or would that be a part outside of the exemption? And I assume maybe some of them move air. So if you have something else happening inside there, is it included or not included in the exemption?
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, I think I have a good answer, but I know someone that does who's in the room, so if I could ask for that to be more clearly.
Gary, could I ask Gary?
Madam Chair and representatives for the record, my name is Gary Wright, Oregon Department of Revenue, property tax specialist for farm use. Madam Chair, Senator Morris, your question was, do the irrigation systems and other systems such as climate control systems, or
I don't know whether you call it climate control, but I assume if you put a blower,
blowers,
the air through the hoop or whatever you call this thing, that okay. kind of thing, small miscellaneous types of activities or processes within this structure, are they exempt or not?
Okay. as this bill is written, it clearly just identifies the structure. So if you're looking at fixtures or attachments such as blowers or a blower or irrigation equipment, those kind of different types of property would be assessed differently according to statute. Irrigation equipment generally is very complex in its structure. It is exempt if it's personal, can be easily moved, and under 307-398, there's another statute which identifies irrigation equipment, which would further exempt wheel lines, center pivots. Generally, though, those are the ones that are identified. Real property irrigation equipment is taxable. What I'm talking about is real property pumps, motors that are bolted to the ground, buried main lines, large pipelines that you'd see over in eastern Oregon. So they are treated differently.
Well, they wouldn't be treated any differently just because they happen to be within the confines of one of these structures, correct? Or would they be treated differently?
Madam Chair, it would depend on how the system was originated. I'm thinking of a sprinkler system when I think of these type of structures. So your pumping system, your wells, all that. Well is part of the land, but your equipment is generally taxable if it's all an enclosed line up to the point where there's a riser. And then when you go beyond the riser, then and you attach personal items, those things are not taxable. But anything that is part of the real property can be attached as part of the real property is taxable. It's a very complex area of statute.
Well, I can see it's minutia that makes a difference to some people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you have obviously a very temporary structure looking at these things, and you string a PVC pipe and you have some kind of a fan that moves air, are those taxable items or are they exempt within the context of this mm-hmm. temporary structure?
John was asking me if they would be considered frost control. I would think sometimes, but they're also climate control too. So frost control generally is to protect from freezing, freezing temperatures. So I would think fans are probably more widely used, in temperature control at higher temperatures than freezing.
But he wasn't asking what they're used for. He's asking what they're taxed at.
Okay. They would be a fixture, and as a fixture, they could be taxed.
Under the farm assessment or under?
Personal property, or under 307-010. You have an identification of what's a fixture, and a fixture would be something that's attached to real property.
Sean, do you want to?
Sure. Madam Chair, what we've tried to do within this amendment is identify when those fixtures are affixed to the building to identify any time when those items become real property and would indicate some permanency of the structure. And that's why you see in the language on 2C does not have a permanent heat source other than a radiant heat provided by direct sunlight. So that speaks to those types of differentiations within current law regarding the permanency of the equipment that would be used.
I'm not sure that we clarified anything here, Madam Chair.
No. Worth, look what you've gotten us into here.
Yeah, I asked a question I didn't want to answer, I guess.
Senator Telfer.
Would you generally follow the rules on identifying these capital assets as to whether they're personal or real, such as you would with the tax code? I mean, would they be roughly the same definition for depreciation purposes and, you know, what's a capital asset? Personal property.
As far as Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, as a matter of taxation for property tax purposes.
If I may, what I was speaking to toward is in the Department of Revenue, we have definitions as to what property. Basically, for depreciation purposes, what's real, what's personal? Would you follow roughly that same criterion identifying what's taxable here as a personal piece of personal property and a piece of real property?
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, I think the distinctions are there between the income and the property tax system, and the depreciations would be different.
So because the definitions of what's personal property and what's real property in this case is different than what it would be for an income tax return.
That's my understanding. I'm not an income tax specialist, however, but.
Yeah. Thank you.
I have another question, if I might, Madam Chair.
I didn't know about that.
Sorry about the last question.
We'll give you one more chance.
Eastern Oregon has an abundance of highly alkaline soils that are generally, they're not productive. Some in fact, are, you find these zones within productive areas. Would the remediation of the alkaline condition of that soil fall under the jurisdiction of this bill?
Okay.
You're talking about the main bill now.
I'm talking about the main bill.
Okay. Okay, Madam Chair and Senator Morris. Generally, this is land that is under some form of farm use, and as the bill is written, it would be recognized the land is no longer in farm use. So I would anticipate those would be like preparatory activities. If you have land that's in an alkaline condition and wouldn't fall under this, an owner would have to prepare their land to a suitable condition, and then they could start farming it. Whereas under this bill, you have a farm operation that's in operation, and then they experience some kind of a catastrophic event, such as the Fazios have experienced, high water tables, fungus, those kind of issues.
Yeah, I understand that, Madam Chair, but I'm aware that you can have productive land that will become alkaline just by virtue of the practice. And I would suggest that there might be considerations that hadn't been thought about with this bill, which I think would be positive by and large because you're encouraging a means of remediating and bringing it back into productive condition, but I know personally of issues where circumstances where this has occurred.
And I believe this bill, the only reason this bill is necessary is because it's within urban growth boundary, isn't that correct?
Madam Chair, actually, not necessarily. The effective party is within the UGB in this case, but Senator Morris's question. What's built into the bill is some consultation with extension services, and under current law, you already have the ability to let the ground go fallow for a year to build some of those soil complexities back into the soil. This would really only be used if those activities couldn't be performed within that one-year period with consultation and certification from Extension Services. So it really is kind of a narrow scope. But the Farm Bureau's interest is because it, in the bill, is because it does provide a mechanism to keep farm in productive agricultural settings.
I can see this to be a valuable tool.
Thank you. Any more questions? Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. We have no one else signed up, so I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2904 and open a work session on 2904. And Senator Morris, we have a Dash 4 amendment. Oh, wait a minute. No, excuse me. I forgot. Our Dash 4 amendment has a technical flaw. So we are going to put this over till tomorrow. I got ahead of myself. My apologies. It's a non-substantive technical change that's wanted here. So we will bring this bill back tomorrow with a new and improved amendment with the anticipation of moving it out then. So I will close. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2904. And open a work session on Senate Bill 976. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members, Senate Bill 976, you should have a copy of the Dash 2 amendment, which replaces the content of the bill. The amendment deals with 10th grade assessments. And it would require the Department of Education to grant a 10th grade assessment waiver to eligible school districts for the next 2 years. It makes a district eligible if the district had an assessment contract with some company that provides assessment tests different from that what is used by the state in the 07-08 school year. Had a test in that year, and then if that entity met conditions for administering an assessment test in the most recent year and would also do so in the waiver year. It makes the waiver valid for one school year with the possibility of renewal, and it requires the department to reimburse the waiver district for assessment costs out of money set aside from ESD revenue for that purpose. And it repeals the granting of waivers on June 30th, 2011.
Okay, this bill may look familiar to the committee. It's called Try Again. Senator Haas, can you tell us the difference between the Dash 2 amendment and the Dash 1 amendment that we put in the bill earlier?
The Dash 1.
The
difference is that there's a sunset now. I've 2011, I think, is the date. June 30th, 2011, and I talked to some of the senators, including Senator Rosenbaum, who thought that was a pretty fair compromise, and I think they're okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee for Senator Haas or from... Okay. Senator Morris, we're in work session, and we have a Dash 2 amendment.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 976.
Senator Morris has moved the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 976. Any discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 976 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved Senate Bill 976 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Haas, you will carry this bill.
Thank you.
Okay, now we are going to open, I think, our probably 18th work session on House Bill 2472.
And we'll come back at 2:45.
No. I got to go to rules.
We just got the correct amendment.
We did?
We're making copies right now, so if you want to...
Okay. Actually, we just got the corrected amendment to House Bill 2472. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to, they're making copies of it now. The copies are going to be available. I'm going to, for the committee and others, I think I will recess until 2:45 and come back here and consider the new and improved amendments to House Bill 2472. So this committee is in recess.